a morning. Today's daf in Sota is Lamed Beis. Let's finish the fifth parak of the Masechta. Sorry, let's finish the sixth parak of the Masechta and start the seventh. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf is on the Zichon Ishmas Liba, Gabriela Bashmuel. My mistake that we were in the fifth is because yesterday we were in the fifth. The sixth parak we started yesterday, sixth parak we're going to finish today. Sixth parak is the daf of Mishnah and Gemara. We are going back just for one day, which is yesterday. We're finishing up the topic of Sota, which makes sense. We're learning Masechta to Sota, but as you'll see, basically after the parak, with the beginning of the seventh parak, we're pretty much going to be done with Masechta to Sota, even though there are more parakim to go, but the topics will be different topics, various topics. We are discussing Eid Echad by Sota, an anomaly that occurs in the world of Sota is that we believe one witness. After Kinu and after Stira, she was warned in front of two witnesses. She secluded herself in front of two witnesses. Now, if one witness were to come forward and say that she committed adultery, that the one witness actually saw the act of adultery, so at that point in time, he's believed, he's given full credibility. She is treated as if she's not a Sota Misafik, but a Sota Vadai, and we don't go to the base of Mitzvah. She doesn't drink the Mesota. That's it. It's over. There's an Isser Olam that's created. There was an Isser Olam even before the Eid Echad came. But now the Isser Olam previously could be resolved by the Mesota. Now with the Eid Echad coming forward and testifying, that's it. There's an Isser Olam. The Isser Olam, the marriage still has to be terminated by either death or divorce. But the one aid is going to be given full credibility. That's what we learned together. We learned that already from day one of the Masechta, and we saw that on Daf Beis and Gimel. But the Mishnah reminded us this as well. And then we saw yesterday the Chiddush of Ula. Ula says, not only do we say that one witness is believed, but in terms of numbers, numerically, we treat that witness as if he's two, which makes sense, meaning that normally, how many witnesses do you need for the point of credibility? You need two witnesses. If the Torah is telling us that one witness is believed in the world of Sota, Seula says, so you know what? What we're saying is that one witness has the credibility as two witnesses. According to Ula, that means that let's say I have one witness coming forward and saying, I saw the act of adultery, and another witness coming and saying, no, I didn't see, I know what you're talking about, meaning I was there also, there was no act of adultery, so it's one against one. So normally, what do we say against one? What do we normally say one against one? We normally say, they're arguing with one another, they cancel each other out, and we're back to square one. Where's square one? Square one is, we don't know. And if we don't know, she's going to drink the Mesota. Ula says, no, that's not correct, because the one witness who says that he saw the act of, the act itself, so he's going to be treated like two. So even though he's one equaling two. So if he's going against another witness, well, his two votes are obviously going to outnumber and overpower the one vote. That's Ula's chiddush, that's what Ula said. The problem with Ula's pshat, as we noted yesterday, is that's not the Mishnah. The Mishnah actually gives this very scenario. The Mishnah talks about it where it's one against one. Eid Omar Nitmes, I'm just reviewing the Mishnah we saw yesterday. Eid Omar Nitmes, Eid Omar Lo Nitmes. If I have one witness saying that there were adultery occurred, another witness saying adultery did not occur, Isha Meres Nidmes, Isha Meres Lo Nidmes, Haisa Shosa. The Mishnah says she would drink, meaning the Mishnah seems to be ruling that the one cancels the one. And we're back to we don't know. And we don't know is going to be resolved by the Mesota. According to Ula, we do know, because one against one is really two against one, according to Ula. So Ula said, what you're going to have to do, this is where we ended off yesterday, is you're going to take your pen, you're going to go to the Mishnah, and you're going to edit the Mishnah a little bit, and not a little bit, you're only adding one word, but an important word, Lo Haisa Shosa. Ula actually edited the Mishnah so that the Mishnah would not read Lo Haisa Shosa. That's what we saw yesterday, that was the Chiddush of Ula, and in the Chiddush of Ula, obviously, it got to the point where he edited the Mishnah. So Amar, because the Chiddush HaTorah is not to, the Chiddush HaTorah is to believe the one who says he saw the act of adultery. There's no Chiddush on the Torah to say I didn't see anything. There the Torah doesn't invoke any novel ruling. So the novelty is that the one who says he saw, it's a good question, but the Torah's Chiddush is only the one who says he saw, he's given the credibility as if he's two. So Ella Amar Ula, we're going to go back to the Gemara where we left off yesterday. It's about two-thirds of the way down on Lamed Alpha Mid Beis. Ella Amar Ula, Tani Lo Haisa Shosa. So this is where Ula says, okay, you're going to change the Mishnah. The Mishnah now is going to read Lo Haisa Shosa. V'chein Amar Yitzchak Lo Haisa Shosa. Not only was it Ula, but it was Rav Yitzchak as well, agreeing with this principle that that one witness in the world of Sota is going to believe as to. What about our Mishnah? Change the Mishnah. One against one is really two against one. And so therefore, she's not going to drink because we're going to believe the one over the one. Because that one who says that she was Matame is really two. Okay. It's not really two, but treated like two. Okay. Rabbi Chiya Amar Haisa Shosa. Now, on this point, Rabbi Chiya is going to disagree. Rabbi Chiya says, no. I think we're going to keep the Mishnah as it is. The Girsa that we have in the Mishnah is the Girsa that we're going to keep. And that is that she would drink. So the Rabbi Chiya Kashi de Ula. So the Gemara says, now, according to Rabbi Chiya, I have a small question, and that is, Ula makes sense. Meaning, what did Ula say? It's not Ula, it's what we've learned. That when one witness comes forward in the world of Sota, in the context of Sota, after Kino and after Stira, that one witness is believed as two. Ula's right. What is Rabbi Chiya going to do there? To which the Gemara is going to answer the following. The Hamar Ula, I'm sorry. Kasha de Ula, lo Kasha. Kamba Vasachas, Kamba Zacharzeh. So Rabbi Chiya is going to say, suggest the following. Now, in terms of the answer the Gemara is providing over here, lengthy discussion between Rashi and Tosfos, but we're right now just going to sit with Rashi and we're going to work with Rashi's Pshat. Kamba Vasachas, Rashi writes, Masnisin Kishehidu Shneim Besok de Dibor. Rashi says, our Mishnah scenario where it's one against one is they're coming into the Beis Din simultaneously. And one offers his testimony, she committed the act of adultery. Toch kedei dibor, immediately following, comes in the other witness and says, no, she did not. Rashi writes, akarchach, sorry, masisin kesheidu shneim besoch kedei dibor, debalu dvar of miyad. There, the one is going to negate the one. The lone is kaimu eidosam bebezden. Because the Beis Din did not affirm yet the testimony of that one of that first one witness. Now it's true that the Torah does give that one credibility as two, but Rashi writes, Kigon, that's only when that's only when the one comes into the Beis Din, offers his testimony, it went unchallenged, now that one is going to equal two. Desulo matzi chalachushe. Because now, one can't come in now and discredit that the first one. Because the first one, when he went in unchallenged, then that's when it's going to sound like two. That's when it will be like two. But Rashi says, explaining the Gemara, if it's one against one, where they're coming in simultaneously, and the second one's toch de dibor the first, so then it negates the testimony of the first, and then that's what our Mishnah is going to be dealing with. That is how Rabbi Chiya is going to explain our Mishnah, and agreeing in principle to Ula, but at the same time supporting the read of our Mishnah. All right, Tanan. Where are we at right now? Where do we stand? Machlokus between Ula and Rabbi Chiya. Ula is of the opinion that if it's one against one, the first one who says he saw the act of adultery is always going to be treated like two, and therefore, according to Ula, if it's one against one, it's really two against one, and we're going to believe the first one who says he saw the act of adultery. And Rabbi Chiya sometimes will agree with that point, but not when they come in simultaneously. Okay, Tanan. Let's take a look at our Mishnah. Eid Omer Nitmez Vishnaim Omer Lo Nitmez. One witness says he saw the act of adultery. Two then come in and say, nope, we did not. Haisa Shosa, she would drink the Mesota. Now that makes sense, because again, what is one? One who saw the act of adultery is treated like two. But now that one is going against two. So it's two against two. So once again, equal forces, but opposite. Bring us back to point zero. Point zero is, we don't know, she's going to drink the Mesota. Now the Gemara says, that's what the Mishnah says. Good, there's nothing to debate. But what there is, however, is there's a clear inference being made. If you now are medayik in the Mishnah, now the Mishnah doesn't say this, but certainly the implication is, if it's one against one, so she would not drink. Okay, and that's the port of Avula. Tiyufta de Rabbi Chiya, and that's a challenge to Rabbi Chiya. Amalcha Rabbi Chiya, l'tamechem ha-sefer. So Rabbi Chiya says, really, you're going to ask a question on me based on an inference from the Mishnah. So Rabbi Chiya says, I'll tell you what, why don't we just read on in the Mishnah, and let's keep doing this exercise of making inferences in the Mishnah. Shnaim omrim nitmeis, ve'echad amer lo nitmeis. Let's look at another case in our Mishnah. Two people come and say, she was metame. One comes in and says, nope, she was not metame. So it's two against one. So now lo haisa shosa. So there, the ruling is easy. two against one, two is believed. I mean, one would have been believed, but two is believed. Now the two is going up against one, certainly the two is going to outmatch the one. That's what the Mishnah says. Rabbi Chiya says, good, that's what the Mishnah says. What's the inference in that statement? That means now if I just were to adjust one detail, which is, instead of two versus one, it's one versus one, what would be the halacha? Haisa shosa, she would drink. Why? Because one against one negate each other, and we're back to we don't know. And therefore she's going to drink the mesota. So Rabbi Chiya says, and that would support me. So if really you're interested in making diukim in the Mishnah, you can make a diuk in my favor. And so Rabbi Chiya says, I don't see why the Mishnah should be any stronger proof for Ula than it is for me, because I just proved my point from the Mishnah, just making a diuk from another part of the Mishnah. Ela kula bipsula edu. So the Gemara now says, according to Rabbi Chiya, you know what? Let's take a look at our Mishnah totally anew. We assumed up until this point in time that the Mishnah was dealing with kosher edim coming forward and testifying. At this point, Rabbi Chiya says, let us now totally turn away from the simple pshat of our Mishnah, and let's take a look at the Mishnah from a new perspective. Really, what the Mishnah is describing over here is not adult males coming and testifying, but people who normally are not qualified to testify, they're the one testifying. Now, how does that work? So as Rashi explains over here, because look, under normal circumstances, you need people who are qualified to testify, come and testify. That goes without saying. Has to be adult males. Over here, however, the Torah already is basically rewriting the laws of Eidus. The Torah is saying in the world of Sota, one witness is believed. Now we know that one witness normally is not believed. In the world of Sota, one witness is believed. So once the laws of Eidus is already bending, so as Rashi points out over here, so therefore there's more room for bend. Meaning under normal circumstances, you need two adult males. Here, one adult male. So Rashi points out, so once you're bending the requirements, so therefore you can have women come and testify, avadim come and testify, we can have anyone come and testify. And that's now what the Mishnah is dealing with. The Mishnah is one versus one, two versus one, two versus two, are all talking about where the people coming in and testifying are not qualified. And now, here's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. And as far as the author of the Mishnah is concerned, the author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Nechemya. When the Torah believes one witness, every place the Torah believes one witness, such in of itself, the sentence is a little bit misleading. All those places, you know where all those places are? Sota. That's all those places. Say, there is Eidus, right? Eidus Isha, right? The Gemara in Yevamos, the end of the Masechta, spends a number of prakim discussing where the husband went away, and we do believe one witness over there. Okay, and by the way, this whole discussion that we're learning right now also came up in Yevamos as well. So, to be fair, there are two places. Although, again, to be fair, you could really segregate the two, because Eidus Isha, that's a Din D'Rabbanan, and Esota, it's a Din D'Araisa. So, and that statement also needs much more clarification. In the meantime, however, okay. I'll tell you what, I made the mistake of bringing it up. Let's just move on. And you come to me after, we'll talk. So, Rabbi Nechemi Amar, Kol Makom Shemin Torah Eid Echad Halacha Charov Deus. So, when the Torah believes one witness, meaning in the world of Sota. So, Halacha Charov Deus. So, here, the requirement now no longer is Kasher Eidim, but now we just go with strict numbers. Shtei Nashim B'Shechad, Kishnei Nashim B'Shechad. So, let's say I have two women against one man. Well, how do the two women count in the world of Sota, as far as testimony is concerned? Two. How does one man count in the world of Sota? One. It's two versus one. Okay. It would be no different than two versus one under normal circumstances when the requirement is to have kasher edim. Okay. And that would mean, take a look at the last Rashi on the daf. No, not the last Rashi. Second to last Rashi. So, Hotziol Eidu Zimichla Kol Yidusha B'Tor Lefichach Psulim V'Kshem Shavim. In the world of Sota, everyone's on an equal footing. V'Halacha Charov Deos Hami Eidim V'Davar. And now, you just simply count bodies. How many people said that she committed adultery? That's two. Doesn't matter who those two are. That's two. How many people say she's not committing adultery? One. Okay, that's one. Two versus one. We're going to believe the two. That's what our Mishnah is describing. That's what our Mishnah is talking about. That, the Gemara says, is now a totally new way to look at the Mishnah. And if so, then the Mishnah no longer serves as a source for Ula, Rabbi Chia, meaning we're now totally looking at the Mishnah anew. Iga Damri. Now, huh? No, she won't be Chayv Misa. Meaning, even with the one witness testifying. With the two witnesses, no. If they're psulim, no. No. The only thing that I'm making out to be a small thing. It's not. The thing which they're accomplishing is Isser Olam. They're going to create a permanent Isser, which that's it. That'll end the. And she'll forfeit her ksuva, etc. Correct. Ika de Amre. The Gemara now has a slightly different version of this statement to Reb Nechemia. Kol hecha de asa eid echad kasher mikara. Here in this Ika de Amre, we're going to modify the statement of Reb Nechemia. In the first presentation of Reb Nechemia, so it was a level playing field. Everybody has a vote. I don't really mean vote, I mean edus. But in other words, everyone is treated as one. Right? Two women are going to beat one man. That's the first presentation of Reb Nechemia. In the second presentation of Reb Nechemia, it's slightly modified. Let's say, for example, the Gemara gives this example, where I have one man comes forward. Okay, so, in the world of Sota, that one man has the power, has the koach of two. And then after that, one man comes and testifies and he says he saw the Tumah. 100 women said no. The 100 women, in this context, is going to be treated like one. And one is not going to be able to be two. So we are not, it's not, meaning the women have a say in the matter on this issue, but not to, it's not going to be a level playing field. The testimony of one man is still going to exceed that of many women. This is the modified.
Because it wasn't 17.
Right. Rashi actually says that as well. So the kasher meikar v'afil me'anoshim namiked echadamin v'hacha b'mayiskinan. Now, as far as our Mishnah is concerned, meaning what did our Mishnah teach us? Our Mishnah that taught us that one against one. So our Mishnah says that she is they negate each other. So kigon da'asai isha mikara v'tirs l'derebbe Nechemia hachi. So now, as far as our Mishnah is concerned, where it's one against one, that's easy. Not easy, but in this modified, in the second version of Rebbe Nechemia, the first one who came was a woman. Again, she has credibility in this context. We're going to believe her in this context, but that's one woman. That's one. Now, when one comes afterwards and says she didn't, so now that's one versus one. So now one versus one, equal but opposite, negate each other, and now we're back to we don't know. And then she's going to drink the mesota. That's our Mishnah. But if the first one who came and testified was a man, so he has a koach hashnayim, he's believed as two. You can have one woman coming afterwards, two women coming afterwards, 100 women coming afterwards, but they're not going to. They come as an aid, and they're believed, but not in this context, because the koach of the one man is going to exceed that of the women or many women that come afterwards.
They have to come together.
Unclear, but let me just finish up. And in terms of how we're going to formulate Rabbi Nechemia, the Gemara says it's going to go like this. When the Torah believes, so we're going to follow, once again, voices, meaning people. So as far as two women are concerned, they're going to be kishne anashim bishachad. They're going to be like two men against one man. Meaning, they will form an opinion. It's not an opinion. They will form a testimony, but their testimony, the sum total of their testimony, will be equivalent to that of one man. But if it's two women against one man, so then it's going to be pago paga. So basically, it's now split. And again, they're opposed to one another. Two forces equal but opposite are negated. Fine. That's the That is the way to look at our Mishnah. Not that our Mishnah is talking about Edim in the classic sense. It's talking about Psule Edus. You can have the conversation in the world of Sota because once the Torah allows one witness to testify, so that means then that people who are normally not qualified to testify can. And then the Gemara presented two formulations of Reb Nechemya. The first formulation is that in the world of Sota, everyone's got one vote. And it doesn't matter who you are. So the man steps forward as one. The two women who step forward are two. And it's a level playing field in the world of Sota. That's the first formulation of Reb Nechemya. And the second formulation, the Gadamre, is a slightly modified version where it's not exactly true. If everyone's a puzzle, so then we just simply count the number of positions on each side. If the first one who testified was a man who has a koach of Shnaim in the world of Sota, so then he's not going to be negated by Psulim, even if it's more than one puzzle. Adkan, that brings us almost to the end of the parak. Just one more thing the Gemara is going to deal with. Vatarta b'psulet islamali. So the Gemara says, now that we looked at the Mishnah this way, you know, the Mishnah could have made its point with one example. But the number of examples that are given in the Mishnah, why? Why so many examples? Because here's what I might have thought. This is a totally novel idea. That basically, we in the world of Sota, we're going to allow Psulim to testify. Fine. And accept it. But this idea, maybe I would have thought, to result in a chumra, but to result in a kula. Kula over here meaning, Rashi says, that she's not going to drink the mesota. You could really argue I know. But, okay, I'm just presenting Rashi. I know. But I'm just presenting Rashi. So But to listen now, to allow the psulim to rule again, I know it's not that simple, but in favor of the woman, meaning that she's not going to drink the water. So I might have thought, no, we're not going to do that. Meaning not based on the testimony of Psule Edus. That's why the Mishnah has to give repeated examples to tell us that Psule Edus testimony in the world of Sota is admissible. And not only admissible, but even if it's going to result in a Chumrah, it's still going to be admissible. That's why the Mishnah needs to give so many examples. Hajan Lach Mishakine, the Gemara, that is the end of the sixth parak of the Masechta. And now let us begin the seventh parak. Beginning of the seventh parak is going to introduce us to many topics in the Torah. The one common theme that we're going to be discussing is as follows. There are a number of mitzvahs in the Torah where a declaration is necessary. There's a speaking part, there's a speaking role. And do you have to say it in Lashon HaKodesh or can you say it in any language? And basically what the Mishnah here is going to do is going to divide certain mitzvahs, declarative mitzvahs, where it has to be said Lashon HaKodesh, and certain declarative mitzvahs where it can be said in any language. And that's it. And that's our Mishnah. And once again, a long Mishnah to open the parak. I see a trend here in the Masechta. Right, we had this in the fifth parak and the sixth parak, where all the Mishnayos are front-loaded, and then much Gemara to follow. Although there are more Mishnayos coming up in the seventh parak. But here we go. Eilun Amar b'chol lashon. Okay. These can be said in any language. Okay. Parshat Sota, Vidui. I'm sorry, let's go step by step. Parshat Sota. Number one, the Parshat Sota. Okay, there's an exchange between the Kohen and the woman. Now, even though obviously in the Torah it's written B'Lashon HaKodesh, but the woman's not understanding Lashon HaKodesh, so you go ahead and you speak to her in the language she understands. The source for every halacha in the Mishnah is going to be discussed in the Gemara. Meaning, how do we know this? So that's going to be discussed. Right now, just the facts. The facts are, Parsha Sota, the dialogue between woman and Kohen, can and must be done in the language she understands. Viduim Eiser, a confession. This is a strange confession, because this confession is, I did a good job. Okay, not your normal confession. But your confession, the Viduim Eiser, I did a good job. The Shemitah cycle is broken up into two three-year cycles. And then, of course, the seventh year, which is Shemitah. But in year one, the schedule of Trumas and Maisos goes as follows. Truma Gedola to the Kohen. I'll just discuss it from the perspective of the farmer. Truma Gedola to the Kohen, that's 2%. Maiser Rishon to the Levi, that's 10%. Then, in year one and two, Maiser Sheni. You then take off another 10%. That 10% you don't give to anyone, you retain for yourself, but it has Kedusha. You go to Yerushalayim and you eat it in Yerushalayim. That's years 1 and 2. Year 3, everything being the same except for that last 10%. That second 10% is not Maaser Sheni, but Maaser Ani. That second 10% is given to the poor. That ends your three-year cycle. That closes the three-year cycle. Then you're given basically another half year to make sure that you are current with all your taxes. Taxes over here meaning Trumos and Maisos. And then the next three-year cycle, Nachamol. You do the same thing again. Right? 2 years of Truma Gedola, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni. And then the last year, which in the total of the Shemitah cycle is the sixth year, Truma Gedola, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Ani. Fine. At the end of the third year and at the end of the sixth year, and again, when I say the end of, around Pesach time, you make a vidu, you make a confession. And where are you going to find this? In the beginning of Parshas Kisavo in the Torah, where the Torah there describes, Be'artes HaKodesh Menabayis, I destroyed the Kodesh, I took it out. In other words, I did everything I was supposed to do. So, it's an actual declaration needs to be stated. What language? The language you understand. Kriya Shema, Tefillah. Kriya Shema and Tefillah can be said in any language. Big discussion in the halacha. What's preferred? Meaning, is it, if let's say your choice is, I mean, this is basic, you know, everyday halacha. But let's say your choice is Lashon HaKodesh, which is obviously Kriya Shema and Tefillah is written in Lashon HaKodesh. Or, I don't understand Lashon HaKodesh, should I say in the language that I understand? So what is better? That's a big discussion. There's no... No conclusion on that, but it's a. But anyway, the Mishnah is telling us it can be said in any language. That for sure. Birchas HaMazon can be said in any language. Benching Shvuas Eidos. You have testimony. You're approached by Beis Din, and Beis Din says, "Okay, we are going to subpoena you to come to court and have you testify." And you say, "Look, I don't know anything. What are you talking about?" And you suppress the testimony that you actually knew. And furthermore, you even swear you don't know testimony. So that is a sin in the Torah. Torah in the end of Parshas Vayikra describes that if you do that, if you suppress that testimony and swear that you don't know the testimony, so and you want to do tshuva, so you have a special carbon that you bring into carbon olav yored, described at the end of Parshas Vayikra. The denial can come in any language. You don't have to deny in Hebrew. You can deny in any language. The denial is a denial. Shvuas epikadon. Similarly, shvuas epikadon. You're entrusted to watch somebody's property. Somebody's possessions. And then he comes over to you and he says to you, okay, can I have my lawnmower back? And you say, what lawnmower? I know. We don't do it. I'm terrible. so antiquated. So the... I don't know where it is, and you deny it, and then not only do you deny, you swear you don't know. You don't know what he's talking about. So under those circumstances, once again, the halach is the denial in any language is considered a denial. If you want to make good, if you want to do tshuva, you want to be mechaper, so you have to go to the Beis Hamikdash. You have to bring a carbon. And the point the Mishnah is making is that what will require you to bring a carbon is a denial in any language. Elo ne'amar b'lashon hakodesh. Now these are the things that have to be said in lashon hakodesh. Mikra bikurim. Okay, the when you bring bikurim to the Beis Hamikdash. So also beginning of Parshas Kisavo, right? The first Aliyah. So Ve'anisa V'amarta, right? Rami Ovid Avi. Okay, this one we're familiar with. We say it on the Seder night. Chalitza has to be done in Lashon HaKodesh. Brachos Uklalos. Okay, when we go on Har Grizim and Har Eval. I know this is an interesting one because historically it happened. Right. It's to the best of my knowledge, it's not going to happen again. I could be wrong about that, but certainly it's an event historically. But still, the Mishnah is telling us it has to be done in Lashon HaKodesh. Birchas Kohanim, when the Kohanim give the bracha to the people when they duchen, has to be done in Lashon HaKodesh. Birchas Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Gadol gives the bracha to the Jewish people on Yom Kippur, it has to be done said by Lashon HaKodesh. Parshas HaMelech. Hakel, the king is going to instruct the Jewish people at the Bizman Hakel, and he reads, and we'll talk more about that later in the parak. So that has to be done by Lashon HaKodesh. Parshas Egla Rufa, when we have a victim of a murder found between two cities, we're going to measure. The proximate city is going to have to bring a carbon and a declaration made by Ziknei Ha'ir, the elders of the city. That declaration has to be said by Lashon HaKodesh. Meshuch Mechama, Mishash Medaber La'am. The Meshuch Mechama, the chief rabbi of the army. Okay. Kind of. but he is going to make a stirring, inspiring speech to the troops before they go out to war. That has to be said in Lashon HaKodesh. That's an interesting one. So Mashiach Mechama B'Shash Medaber La'am Mikra Bikurim Ketzad. Okay, and now the Mishnah, after rattling off what can be said in any Lashon and what has to be said in Lashon HaKodesh, so now the Mishnah does a little bit more explanation. Mikra Bikurim Ketzav Anisav Armat Lefnei Hashem Alakecha Lahalan Omer Ve'anu Alevim Ve'amru Ma'lahalan V'Lashon HaKodesh Avkam V'Lashon HaKodesh. The Mishnah is almost like taking like the Gemara's role over here, like giving us the drushas, how we know this. So the Gemara says is that we have basically a Gzer Shava between Mikra Bikurim and the Levium by Har Grizim and Har Eva. So Chalitza Ketzad Ve'anta V'amra Ulahalan Omer V'anu Alevim V'amru Ma'lahalan B'lashon HaKodesh Avkam B'lashon HaKodesh. As far as Chalitza is concerned, so once again Gzer Shava, the word V'anta, she responds. So we see that the word V'anta means B'lashon HaKodesh, so too by the Chalitza. Rabbi Yehuda Omer V'anta V'amra Kacha Asher Tomer B'lashon HaZeh. Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't need Gzer Shava. In the words themselves, in the instructions themselves of the Chalitza, it's pretty clear that she has to say it in this formula, the way it's written in the Torah, and she can't say it in a language, in any other language. Brachos who call us Ketzad, examples of Har Grizim and Har Eval. Kevin Shavri Yisrael Sayardin, Uvala Har Grizim and Har Eval. So Yeshua takes the Jewish people, crosses over the Yarden, and now brings them to Har Grizim Har Eva, Shibbe Shomron. So the Mishnah over here identifies where we're talking about, up in the Shomron. Shibbe Tzad Shechem, it's right by Shechem. Shibbe Eitzel Elonei Moreh. Shenem Alohema Be'Ever Har Yarden. They are Be'Ever Har Yarden, they're opposite the Yarden. Ad Elon Moreh. And we know, we saw already a number of parshiyos ago, so Avram went to Shechem, which was right by Elon Moreh. My Elon Moreh, Amor Lahalan Shechem, Af Elon Moreh, Amor Kan Shechem. So therefore, by just knowing your Chumash, so you know that the Shechem that we're referring to, or I should say better, the Elon Moreh that we're talking about, is the one that is contiguous to Shechem. Sheshisha Shvatim Alu L'Rosh Har Grizim. Vishisha Shvatim Alu L'Har Eval. The Mishnah here now gives more description regarding how this went. Six shvatim stood on Har Grizim, six stood on Har Eval. V'akwanim v'alivim aron amdim lamata. And they were situated, the shvatim were situated on the mountains. And Kohan Levim and the Aron were between the two mountains. Lamata. Be'emsa Kohanim efkifin etza Aron. I'm sorry. They were below in the middle, and the Kohanim would be surrounding the Aron, and the Levim as the Kohanim, Levim would be surrounding the Kohanim. V'chol Yisrael mikan umikan, and then the Jewish people would be on either side. Shenemer v'chol Yisrael v'zekena v'shoshav v'shoftav omdim mizeh mizeh la Aron. So basically, you had concentric circles around the Aron. Hafchu panim kalpe Har Grizim v'paschu bebracha, and they would turn to Har Grizim and they would open up with a bracha. Now, if you open up the Chumash and you read the brachos and klalos of Har Grizim and Har Eval. So the Torah only gives the klalos. The Torah doesn't give the brachos. But it's clear from the Mishnah that that for every klalo there was a corresponding bracha that was given. And it doesn't take a hefty imagination, because we describe it, the Torah describes it as brachos uklalos. So even though the Torah only listed them as klalos, but the assumption in the Mishnah tells us straight out that there was a bracha given and then the corresponding klalo. So, kalpahum? I don't have a good one. I should have one, but so they turn to Har Grizim and they issue the bracha. Anyone who doesn't make peso masecha, that's the first example given. Now everyone says amen. Probably, I think, or at least for me, it was a misconception. I always had only the people on one mountain saying amen. The Mishnah says no, elu ve'elu, they both say amen. And then they turn to Har Eval and open up with klala. And everyone answers amen. And you go through all the brachos of klalos. Afterwards, they took the stones, they built the mizbech, v'sadu b'sid, and they plastered, v'kasu alav is kol divrei haTorah, and they write the entire Torah, b'shivim lashon, in 70 languages. Now that... That's a lot. That is a lot. Some of Farshim say that the entire Torah over here doesn't mean the actual text of the Torah. Some say it's all the mitzvot of the Torah. Anyway, but in 70 languages, Be'er Heitev, the Torah supports this idea that it was written in a language that anyone and everyone could understand. And then they took the stones of Valanu Bim Kaman, and then they lodged in their place. They take a look at the last Rashi in the Mishnah, top of Lamed Beis, Lamed Beis, Valanu Bim Kaman Bebeis Malonam Begilgal. They took the stones and they built the stones because we know that for the next 14 years there was a edifice of the base, well, not the base of Mikdash, but a Mishkan, an edifice of the Mishkan in Gilgal. For the 14 years where it took the Jewish people to conquer Eretz Yisrael and to divide Eretz Yisrael, 7 years of conquering, 7 years of division. So for those 14 years, the Mishkan was in Gilgal. And then after that, set up in Shiloh, and that was there for the next almost 400 years, 369 years in Shiloh. Okay. I'm just going to pause. I'm going to breathe. That was a lot. Good. We are now starting the Gemara on Lamed Beis, Amud Beis. So again, we just saw a lengthy Mishnah, where the Mishnah detailed that there are numerous times in the Torah where there needs to be a declaration. Some of them must be said Bil Lashon HaKodesh, and some can be said B'chol Lashon. And so we start off with the Mishnah Keseder, and we start off now with Sota. Parsha Sota Minalan. How do I know that Sota can be said in any language? Now we have a Girsa in our Gemara, and Rashi does not like the Girsa in our Gemara, and Rashi opts with a different Girsa. I'll just read the Gemara. Dechsev Amar Koin Li'isha B'chol Lashon Shu Omer. That's the way we have in our Gemara. Rashi says he does not like that Girsa, but he prefers the following. Hachi Garsin, I'm reading the first Rashi of the Gemara. The Amar El Ha'isha, the Koin says to the woman, Rashi just simply rejects our girsa. Anyway, it has to be El Ha'isha. Look at the next Rashi. The El Ha'isha means there has to be a communication. In other words, there's a difference between speaking at versus speaking to. Right, speaking as just simply means I'm speaking, you're there, and good. Speaking to El Ha'isha, meaning that the woman has to understand what's about to happen. That's what the Torah wants. So if that communication can't be done in Hebrew because she doesn't understand Hebrew, fine. So change the language to the language she understands. Fine. Next, Tanur Rabbanan. Mashmias also b'chol lashon shishamas. Amai shosa. So you communicate to her in any language that she understands. Mahi shosa. What is she drinking? The uva mehi shosa. In and what she's drinking. We're gonna explain all four of these in just a moment. Amanit meis. And why she became defiled. Uva mehi nitmeis. And how did she become defiled? So let's go over all four of these points. Amahi shosa aliske kinu vistira. Right? Why is she drinking? Because kinu and stira. Meaning we explained to her. In other words, you were warned by your husband in front of witnesses. You secluded with that man in front of witnesses. Okay, so that's why we're here. Meaning that needs to be explained to her. Uva mehi shosa. So be mekeres shocheres. And you explained to her that you're going to be drinking from a mekeres shocheres, an earthenware cup. Right, the Gemara earlier, remember we spent a lot of time earlier in the Masechta discussing the Mida Keneged Mida, the measure for measure. Right, she used fancy dishes, therefore she is going to be drinking from a Mekir Shocheres. This has to be explained to her, is what we're learning right now. Amanid Mesal is case, Chok V'Yaldos. Right, what led to the, again, alleged adultery, immaturity, right? Levity, immaturity, meaning explain to her that, look, let's say you did it. You know, blame it on immaturity. I mean, you know, try to elicit a mea culpa from her. And also, an important question that we need clarified is, even if, let's say, you did have relations with that man, were you a willing participant? Were you forced? I mean, that's important information. The Kol Kach Lama, and the Gemara then goes on to explain, why is that such important information? Shelo lo tzilaz amayim hamarim. Because, let's say, for example, she was violated and we didn't know that information. Meaning that wasn't communicated. Okay. What's going to come out? What's going to come out is, she's going to drink the mesota and nothing's going to happen to her. Because ones muteris, she's an ones. She's an anusa. She's muteris. But as Rashi points out over here, now what's that going to do to her? It's going to embolden her. Meaning, obviously sympathetic to what just happened, but at the same time, she's going to think, oh, this water doesn't work. Meaning, I was told that if I have relations with that man, I'm going to die. I had relations with that man, I didn't die. And she's going to tell others, you look, the water's no good. She'll tell herself the water's no good, and it'll lead about people being motzi las. People will say, hey, you know, you heard that story, woman actually slept with the man, water was ineffective, and we don't want that to happen. So the Kohanim need to know beforehand, was it bonus or was it baratzon? Because if it's bonus, so the water's not going to do anything. If it's baratzon, water's going to do something. Vidu and Meister, Minolan. Okay, next. The Vidu and Meister has to be said, B'loshan HaKadosh. Dechziv, Amar Tofnei Hashem Lekecha. B'yarte Kadosh Menabayis. V'yalaf Amir HaMisarta B'choloshan. Sorry, I was incorrect. Let me edit myself. Vidu and Meister can be said in any language. How do I know that? Because we have the word Amira. The word Amira, much like we had by the Sota, can be said B'choloshan. So too, when it comes to the Vidu and Meister, can be said B'choloshan. Shomer. Amalei Rezvid La'abayi V'yalaf Amir HaMilevim. So the Gemara says we also have Amir when it comes to the Levium. So, and that has to be said B'Lashon HaKodesh. So as long as you are open to Gzeira Shava, why don't you have a Gzeira Shava? That brings us to the conclusion that Vidu and Meister must be said B'Lashon HaKodesh. Dan an Amir Great Esa, may Amir Great Esa, vein Danim Amir Great Esa, may Ania the Amira. So the Gemara says that basically we have a better Gzeira Shava from the Parsha of Sota. Because there, in Vidu and Meister, it's just the word Amira, as opposed to the Levium, so there it's Va'anita Va'amarta. Okay. Tanya Rashbi Omer Adam Omer Shivcha B'kol Namuch V'gnusa B'kol Ram. A person, when he says the Shevach, so he should say it B'kol Namuch. He should say it low. Don't tout your own, your merits. The meaning, as I pointed out earlier, when we talk about the Vidui and Meister, right, for some reason, I mean, we call it confession because of the word Vidui. But really, it's not a confession. It's basically, I did what I was supposed to do. Right? Rashi writes over here, Lo avarti mi mitzvasecha, v'lo shachachti, hainu shevach atzmo. Right? I did everything right. Right? The first year, second year, Truma Gedola, Meister Rishon, Meister Sheni, third year, Meister Ani. I did everything. And obviously, by the way, you're only going to say it if you did everything. you're not going to say it at the end of the third year if you're missing. But anyway, say it b'kol namuch, teaches us the Rashbi. Ugenusa b'kol ram. And then, however, if it's your genus, so for example, a rami oved avi, right? So that you should say b'kol ram. So. Shivcha b'kol namuch min vidui ha'maiser genusa b'kol rami mikra bikurim u'genusa b'kol ram v'amar Rav Yochanan mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai mimnei ma tiknu tefila b'lachash. So the Gemara says, really, when you go over your genus, when you go over those things which are embarrassing to you, you should say it in a loud voice? No, just the opposite. In fact, tefila, meaning davening. The davening was instituted that to be said balachash. The Gemara and Brachos teaches us, and Rashi brings it down over here. Chana kola lo yishama, meaning when Chana davened to Kadosh Baruch Hu, so she said in a voice that was very low. Nobody was able to hear. Eli wasn't able to hear. Eli thought she was drunk. So tefillah needs to be said balachash. Kedela levayshes over averash. Arei lo chilak hakasav makom bein chatas la'ola. So the reason why is because in your Shemoneh Esrei, you're going to admit, here's what I did wrong, here's what I need to improve upon, right? Slach lanu avinu kichatanu. So you don't want to say that out loud, you want to say it quietly. You don't want to embarrass yourself. So you say it balachash. So, and furthermore, the Gemara says, and I'll bring you other evidence, that that really all your sins should be kept down, meaning admit them, but don't broadcast them. In fact, you know that the Karban Chatzos can only be brought in the north of the Azara. And the same thing is true with the Ola. The Karban Ola can be brought in the north and the Azara. Why specifically those two Karbanos? Because had the halacha been that only the Chatzos be brought in the north of the Azara, so let's say now you are bringing your Karban Chatzos and you're now in the north side of the Azara. You're basically broadcasting to everybody, hey, guys, I'm bringing a Karban Chatzos. Right? You raise your hand and you say, okay, here I am, north side of the Azara. The fact now that the Ola also is brought in the north, so that now allows people at least to not broadcast what they did wrong. Gemara is going to ask that. So excuse me. So now the question stands. How can you tell me that the Gnush should be broadcasted when davening needs to be done balachash, the carbon chatas can be masked by the carbon ola, so that way you don't have to broadcast to everybody that you're a sinner. So lo tema gnuso elam emat sa'aro. So the Gemara says, okay, correction. The in terms of your gnus, anything which is embarrassing, the mistakes that you made, there's no need for you to broadcast that. That's unnecessary. In terms of what you should say out loud, that's tsaros. Rashi, tsaros she'avro alav dehainu tsaros she'avro al Yisrael. Tsaros Lavan haram, tsaros Mitzrayim. Okay, the tsara of Lavan, right? Last week's parsha, right? The tsara of Mitzrayim. So the pain that we endured, so that should be said b'kol ram. That should be said out loud. Genuso, but things which are embarrassing, so that should be kept quiet. Okay, the Tanya v'tami tami yikra, tsarach laodiyav tsaro l'rabim. So when you are in pain, so tami tami yikra. That's obviously a reference to the mitzora. He has to announce. He has to make a proclamation. I am tami. Why? Why do you do that? So v'rabim mevakshem alav rachamim. So, because what hopefully you will do is basically sound the fire alarm. I'm in trouble. I'm in pain. Other people will hear you. Other people will daven on your behalf. And so, when something happens to you, you call out, and other people will ask Rachmanis for you. So the Gemara, just do this quickly. The Gemara says that the Rashbi's teaching is tefillah was instituted balacha, so that when you admit the things that you've done wrong, so you don't have to go through public, there's no need to go through public humiliation. It's not preferred. It's better that you do it quietly. And a proof for this brings the Rashbi, is the fact that the Chatas and the Ola are brought in the north. And the reason why the Torah allows, the Akash Baruch Hu allows the Ola to be brought in the north, is so that when the person brings his Chatas in the north, it won't be conspicuous that he's bringing a carbon chatas. So the Gemara says, this is basically Ben's question. There are a number of telltale signs in the base of Mikdash that indicate that this is a chatas, not an ola. First of all, the blood. When the blood sprinkled the mizbech of a chatas, it hits all four corners, not the ola. So dam chatas lamala v'dam ola mata. And also, place on the mizbech where the blood is sprinkled. Dam goes on the top of the mizbech, ola on the bottom of the mizbech. Hasam kohen hu diyada. So the Gemara says, yeah, but when we're talking about the blood and the application of the blood on the mizbech, that's known by the kohanim. Meaning that's not broadcasting. Vaika chatas nekeva. So the Gemara says again, ola is a male, chatas is a female. So ola zachar, chatas nekeva, ola zachar. Hasa michse ba'alya. So the Gemara says, okay, but there, somebody has to really be looking to see whether the animal is male or female. Generally speaking, the tail covers the animal. Tainach, just one second. Tainach kivsa siira ma'ikal amema. So the Gemara says, yeah. So if it's a sheep with a long tail, good. But siira, but if it's a female goat, no tail or very stumpy tail. It's very easy to identify which gender. So the Gemara says, yeah, but okay, you could have purchased the kifsa, you purchased the seira. That's on you. So the ibay le lasui kifsa the kamaisi seira. Chatas davar eskocham delo sagi delav seira ma'ika lameimar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but certain averos where the Torah mandates you have to bring a seira. Avodah zara, for example, you have to bring a seira. So there's no masking what you did wrong. So the Gemara, you're walking into the azara with your seira. Everyone sees that it's a female goat. And you're now going to have to suffer the embarrassment, and you're basically publicly broadcasting. Gemara's answer: Hasam nechsef nezo kiecha dinachaperle. The Gemara says, "Yeah, but there we're talking about a vodah zarah. Vodah zarah, obviously, extraordinarily heinous crime. Part of the kapara is going to be the public shame and humiliation you have to go through as you march your seira into the azara. So the Gemara says, under normal circumstances, that should be between you and Akash Baruch Hu. There's no need to broadcast that information. In the one singular event of avodah zarah, there the public shame is a necessary component of the kapara itself. Okay, stop here. Tomorrow we pick it up with Kriya Shema.